The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1131. It is the 1st of August, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Dr. Steve Staley, CEO of Upland Resources. UPL is the ticker there. And Steve discusses their license announced today for hydrocarbon exploration and appraisal in onshore northern Tunisia. And he also answers some investor submitted questions. Plus, I also have John Blamire, Chief Operating Officer and founder of Phalanx Group, FLX. And John talks about the acquisition of Secure Storm and their recent contract renewal with a prominent governmental department. Plus, I also have James Campbell, Managing Director of Botswana Diamonds, BOD, BOD. And James gives an update on their South African exploration operations. Plus, first time on the podcast, Paul Griffiths, Chief Executive Officer of Predator Oil and Gas. That's PRD. And Paul talks about their projects. They're recently listed, actually, on the main list, but their projects are in Trinidad and offshore Ireland. And also, by the way, Steve Staley from Upland is a non-executive director of this company. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Steve Staley, CEO of Upland Resources. That's UPL ticker. Steve, thanks for joining me.
Great, thank you. Good, very glad to be here.
Yeah, we've been chatting now for quite a few years, and it's nice to see that the plan unfolding, because you've alluded to what's going to happen, what you're going to be doing, and as often as not, it does take a bit longer than normal, but it's slowly unfolding like a blossoming flower here, Steve. So before we go into this part of the plan that's unfolding, let's for people new to the podcast or not familiar with Upland, can you summarise what Upland Resources is all about, please?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we are a standard listed upstream oil and gas company. So London Stock Exchange listed, market cap now about £20 million. We are active in the UK. We've got two licenses in the UK. We're also, as we will talk about, becoming active in Tunisia. Our other area of focus geographically is in Malaysia. And so we're in a very active period of news at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to say that the next big milestone is WIC, isn't it?
WIC, yep, that's a high impact well that we will be drilling in September this year. So that's very near term. We're looking at a potential in place resource there of about 250 million barrels on our estimation.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's go to this new bit of news. You've said you are looking around North Africa, and this is the news that sort of lots have been waiting for. It's a new permit in Tunisia. We've got quite a few questions on this, Steve, so take us through some of the headlines of this, please, if you could.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the permit's called Sawaf. It's in northern Tunisia, and it's gas-prone. We know it's gas-prone because there's an existing discovery there. It was made back in the 1950s, but never properly appraised. And, of course, back in those days, no one was looking for gas, so it wasn't of great use. These days, there are, across the permit, there's several gas pipelines. There's local ones supplying local markets, but there's also the major Transmed pipeline that makes its way to Sicily and across to Europe. So, very good location from the sort of infrastructure point of view, but it's in a very good spot from the subsurface point of view. There are well-known source rocks there, the Fadin, the Balou, and good reservoir rocks. So we've undertaken a thorough mapping of this area. We've done data rooms there over this area and others in Tunis, and we've chosen this one as the best first asset. We have a lot of experience in Tunisia between us, several decades, and we really like what we've seen. So technically it looks good. I say commercially, Tunisia is a good place to find gas. At the moment, you're looking at wholesale gas prices in Tunisia of somewhere between about $7.50 per 1,000 cubic feet. So that compares very favourably to most of the parts of the world.
Yeah, Okay. Well, listen, we've got quite a few questions from private investors, and so let's see if you can answer some of these. Obviously, maybe some of you won't be able to, but the question one is, there was a discovery here at Sawaf 50 years ago with very substantial quantities of gas. You mentioned in the RNS, and someone says, can you tell us some of the history behind Sawaf and who held the permit before, and can you explain the type of numbers behind the substantial quantities? So a couple of questions there in one.
Yeah, I'm going to preface my answer to any of your questions here, Justin, just by the statement that I can't go into perhaps as much detail on some of these questions as the questioners would like. We are in this process of award, and we just need to move on a little further in terms of bureaucracy of the process before we can say a lot more about the permit. But in terms of, for instance, the data that's available, yes, there are five wells and about 1,000 kilometres of 2D seismic existing over this area. So it sounds like a lot, but bear in mind that the size of this permit is just over 4,000 square kilometres. That's nearly 1 million acres. So it's a very big area. So a lot of running room, as we like to say in oil and gas. The potential is there to find big things.
Yeah. Well, I did it's a quick scan. I realised that's a quarter the size of Wales or the size of Cape Verde. So that's it's quite big. So, okay. So, next question is, what timeline is there for starting 2D seismic? Presuming the results are favourable, how soon until we might start drilling one of the targets?
Right. Seismic, because we will be shooting 2D seismic, new 2D seismic, that's always dependent on availability of suitable crews to shoot it. And that's always a changing picture as crews move around. At the moment, that looks very encouraging. We do keep an eye on that in all the areas we're active in as to what crews are available. But the beauty of 2D seismic versus 3D is that it tends to be quicker to acquire, certainly on land, quicker to process and interpret. So you're not looking at the sort of six-month processing time frames that you have with 3D. It's much shorter than that. It's a matter of weeks. So, you know, I can't give you an exact time frame, but I think we will be out there fairly quickly, and the ultimate aim of that, of course, is to choose a drilling location for our first well.
Okay, and question one as well. I noticed this in the comments as well. Someone highlighted this on today's Tunisia permit. In the comments, you said this opportunity would fit well with the time frame for the Wick well. What is meant by that? Fit well.
Yep, in terms of time frame, Wick will spud in September, as they say. Takes a time to drill. We will be well advanced with our planning, we hope, for the Tunisian 2D seismic. And by that time, so we will, you know, we'll be looking at having some real news coming out of Tunisia, we hope, not long after the Wick wells finish drilling.
Excellent stuff. So at least two bits of news, significant news coming out in this year. All right. How long have you been looking at this license, this question for?
Oh, over a year at the specific area, general area of northern Tunisia. We've looked at off and on over at least a couple of decades. So it's an area that we know well. Mm. The boundaries of the permits that are on offer shift around as any government decides to sort of parcel things out in different ways. So as far as we're aware, this is the first time the specific outline of permit has been offered. And you know, when you go to one of these data rooms, you're shown the data that sits within the block. So we don't think anyone has seen this assemblage of well and seismic put together in one go. So that's the sort of sense that, in that sense, no one's seen this particular data set before.
Yeah. Okay. Next one is about the Wick well, and it says, what chance of success do you give the Wick drill?
Yeah, the Wick well, we haven't quoted one, and so I can't hear. I would refer you to Corallian, who have, but suffice to say, we believe that its chance of success is good, very good, relative to the reward that's on offer. Otherwise, we wouldn't be there.
Yeah, okay. That's all you need to know. And last question here is, what are your thoughts on Sarawak at the moment? Can you talk us a little about your recent trip to Sarawak? When do we expect more news from Sarawak? I don't know how they knew. Maybe someone's got a bug on you, Steve, but I don't know how they knew you went to Sarawak. Did you go to Sarawak recently?
Yes, I did. And yes, no, I don't know how they knew. But yes, I can't say a great deal about it. I can only say that I'm encouraged. And obviously, when we have news, we will announce it. And we will make that, obviously, the news available to all.
Excellent stuff. Good work, Steve. Okay. But it's all unfolding. It's getting very exciting here. So, Steve, for people listening who are not following the story yet, but are liking what's happening, the progress you're making, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, Justin, yeah. Well, the first reason, near term, we have the high-impact Whit well, which will spud, i.e. start drilling, in September. There's going to be a lot of activity on the run-up to that well, and obviously whilst we're drilling it, and that's going to be an exciting time. Following on from that, so after September, we have several other things ongoing. Obviously, we've got the follow-on from the Whit well with success. Then we'll be planning further wells. We've got Sarawak. We've got now Tunisia. And let's not forget, we also have Hardstoft. That's there. And that's there. We've got four things. That's the second reason, if you like. Third reason, you know, we remain well-funded and backed by supportive cornerstone investors. And that remains the case. It puts us in a good position to do what we want to do. We're not reliant on farm outs. And we've chosen assets where we can go ahead with things and make our own weather, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Excellent stuff. And just an overview here, Steve. What's your ambition for Upland Resources?
Well, as I've always said, Justin, I want to make money for our shareholders. Mm-hmm. That's the ambition. And, you know, we want to enjoy the journey as we do it. And hopefully we are.
Excellent stuff, Steve. Good to chat to you. And hopefully, like I said, lots going on. So hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Blumeyer, Chief Operating Officer and founder of Phalanx Group. It's FLX ticker. John, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. It's great to talk to you again. It's been a while, but it's really great to be back on the show. Thank you.
Yes, we haven't chatted for a while, but like I said, it's been very busy for you. You've had lots of things going on. And in fact, two recent announcements were quite significant, and we'll get into those in a bit. Before we do, John, for people listening who are not familiar with the company, could you give them a sort of overview of what Phalanx is all about, please?
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, Justin, we've gone through a lot of change, a lot of structuring over the last year. And in simple terms, we are a managed security services business. We've got two core areas of business. The predominant part of our business now is cybersecurity. And we run four lines of service within our cybersecurity business. And that is the awareness piece, whereby we help educate and train our clients and their people. We have the assessment line of service, which is all of our penetration testing team run from our office down in Brighton, and they work with companies around the country to test their systems and services and find out where the vulnerabilities are. We have our monitoring business with a response capability which sits there. It's almost like a burglar alarm for businesses networks. We sit, we monitor the organization, we see anything that's going wrong, and we step in straight away, and we've got a guy heading straight to their location within a couple of hours, and we're managing that from our operations center in Birmingham. And then we have our consultancy piece, which is usually the front end of all of our work we do with our clients. We have a guy comes in, sits down with the client, and takes them through what is the security threat to their business and what we can do to help them get into a good place. So that's the cyber business doing really, really well and expanded greatly over the last year through acquisitions and things that we'll talk about. And then there's our corporate intelligence business, which does some of the softer side of our security and advisory work with companies, helping them look at the big picture. If they're going to move to a different part of the world, or they're going to build a new business line, say in Africa or South America, we work a lot with oil and gas companies, we work a lot with extractors. And so that business sits there and provides us with a really good crossover of opportunities of these big corporates into our cybersecurity services. So that's us in a nutshell.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's get into the recent news. So, a couple of weeks back, you acquired Secure Storm Limited. So take us through the details of Secure Storm, if you could, and why you've acquired them, please, John.
So Secure Storm is predominantly a cyber security consultancy, very high-end consultancy, doing most of its business with government departments and very large organizations. We've been looking for a while for a consultancy team like this that could augment our consultancy division, but also help strengthen our linkages into UK government departments, where, of course, we already provide monitoring services and other cybersecurity services. But we want to be able to push our Midgard service into more government organizations because they're lovely contracts to have. They're difficult to win. A lot of it is built through being very, very well technically prepared, but also having a long-standing relationship, which Secure Storm gives us. And so we've now got a strong pipeline of business, a new pipeline of business and government for our Midgard services. And that's the core rationale. That plus it comes with a body of highly talented staff. And when one looks at today's sort of pool of talents available in the market today, the recruitment fees alone would have got close to the very reasonable price we paid for the company.
Yeah, okay. And following on from that, it's a contract via Secure Storm. So take us through this contract renewal.
Yeah, it's a long-standing client of Secure Storm. It's a very prominent department in UK government. I can't tell you the name of them. However, this is, as we believe, is very expandable. It's £300,000 per annum for the next 2 years. And as you know, with government contracts, they're very sticky. And as far as we're concerned, this should continue to roll for many years onwards, past the initial two-year period. It also has the opportunity to expand. But what it also does is it gives us a foothold into a whole new area of government that we weren't in before, and us to be able to demonstrate how good we are with our consultancy services through Secure Storm, but also the other services that we deliver. And we can offer those to all of the other tangential government departments that sit alongside the one that we've just got into. And that's what I was referring to before. This is the start of a really good, strong pipeline of new UK government business over nice, long periods of contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as far as what's coming up, milestones, what is happening, John?
Well, the next big event on the horizon is our annual results on the 14th of August. Obviously, we're in a closed period right now, Justin, so I can't go into too much detail. But let's just be said that the board of directors here are looking forward to the 14th. We're in a confident and comfortable position. We've had a very good transformative year, and there's an awful lot of things that have gone right for the business. It may not be very clear to the market yet, but on the 14th of August, I think there's going to be some good, sound messages that we can place in front of the market that I think are going to help everybody understand what a good trajectory we're on, and we're in line with our own internal expectations.
Excellent stuff. Well, we look forward to that. We'll get you back on for that, hopefully, John. So before we go, three reasons. If someone's listening to this, likes the sound of your confidence here and what you're doing, but are not following the story, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
First of all, very, very strong management team. If you look through our board and you look through all of our managers, we've got excellent experience both from Mike Reed in the buy and build piece right the way through to our financial division, our management division, our sales and marketing division. So that's number one, and I think that's key to any business, good, strong management team. Two, we have now all of the fundamental components you'd require, specifically within cybersecurity intelligence services. We now cover the entire portfolio of services, but we also have a very, very strong delivery mechanism around managed services where there's a very, very strong high margin of business to us. And I think thirdly, it's still a very fast growing industry. There is a certain level of consolidation going on, and we're starting to see the market and the direction of which technology and services is going, and I think we very much back the right model But it's as I said, it's growing really, really quickly. And you know, the old saying, a rising tide lifts all boats. And this boat has a great deal of buoyancy in it.
Marvellous stuff. John, good to chat to you. And hopefully, like I said, we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Brilliant, Justin. Take care. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is James Campbell, Managing Director of Botswana Diamonds. BOD is the ticker. James, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much indeed, Justin.
And am I correct in saying you are in South Africa at the moment in the field?
That's correct. I'm on our Thorny River project in the Limpopo province of South Africa.
Marvellous. Well, listen, you are called Botswana Diamonds, but you have interest in South Africa as well. So, in fact, you know, it's a good time as ever. Give us a brief summary as to all the interests you have there, please, James.
In South Africa, we've got an earn-in venture with a group called Vatomi, and we'll talk about the three bits of news we actually have from there. In Botswana, we've got two joint ventures, one with Alrosa called Sunland Minerals, and that's doing some very exciting exploration in the Central Kalahari, and the other with BCL, which has got some equally exciting exploration projects, again, in the Kalahari. And then finally, we've taken some baby steps in Zimbabwe, where we have a joint venture with Vast Resources PLC.
Yeah, in fact, we had Andrew on from Vast on the podcast yesterday, so there we go. All right, so let's get into this. The RNS you released is an update on South African exploration operations. So take us through the details of this, if you could, James.
Absolutely, Justin. There are three major highlights here. Mm-hmm. The first one is on the Free State Kimberlites. The Free State Kimberlites were eight rediscovery of kimberlites made by Vatomi last year. And I say rediscovery because these were discovered using ground truthing after looking in the National Archives and Africana Library in Kimberley and Bloemfontein. And some of these kimberlites were known to be in production around 1880, would you believe? But some of the records, sadly, have actually expired since that time. And what we also were led to believe, there's very little, if any, modern exploration has been done on these kimberlites. So we undertook a staged process of exploration. Firstly, last year, we undertook whole rock geochemistry to basically prove whether they were kimberlites or not. Tick in the box there, yes, mm-hmm. they were. Mm-hmm. The second thing we did is we undertook ground magnetic work to basically delineate the size of the kimberlites. We've done that, and that was announced. The third stage, which we announced this morning, was the taking of heavy mineral indicator grains, which would give us an analysis of whether these kimberlites would be potentially diamondiferous or not. And what we announced this morning was the results from 3,100 heavy mineral indicators, and they all came out positive in terms of their diamond signature. And why that is important, one must not forget that in this region, we have the world-famous Kimberley, Koffiefontein, and previous Jagersfontein diamond mines, which have been host to many fabulous jewels, including the Excelsior diamond.
Excellent stuff. So go on, go for it. Sorry, James, go on.
Okay, so the next stage on the Free State Kimberlites would be to do some drilling.
Yeah, I was going to say that. What's next? Yeah, drilling. Okay, cool.
Absolutely, because that's the ultimate step up. But in exploration, you have to follow a stepwise process. And if things are positive, you move forward. If they're not, you discard them. But in this case, we have identified eight diamondiferous kimberlites, where we actually now need to go to the next step of doing an evaluation process, which is very exciting.
Yeah, and how long will that take, do you think, before you start doing that?
Well, you know, typically we will do it in a stage process. We wouldn't do all eight kimberlites at the same time. We would pick possibly the first one or two targets, the better targets, and do them this year. Later this year, and then we would carry on results depending from there onwards.
I was going to say, with diamonds, what kind of drill, getting the techniques, what kind of drill do you use? Because obviously you don't want to, I mean, is it possible to, I'm aware of sort of, of course, diamond drilling, but how would you drill these? What would happen here?
Well, there are two types of drilling in this kind of area. First is core drilling, or diamond drilling as you call it, mm-hmm. and that is to get lengths of core which would help us to get an accurate determination of the rock, which we call petrography. And also, we will then take samples for that from microdiamond work. And microdiamond work allows us to recover diamonds down to 74 micrometers. And with these results, we can actually interpolate what the macrodiamond or the potential production grade could be. The second phase after this is called large diameter drilling, where we drill 24-inch large diameter holes, and here we recover chips to recover the larger or macro diamonds.
Excellent stuff. And so as yet, though, it's obviously early stage, but as yet, it's looking good here, is it?
Well, obviously, yes. The first thing, you know, obviously, you firstly discover an anomaly, then you discover a kimberlite, then you assess whether it's diamondiferous or not, and then you assess whether it's commercial or not. So we're quite far down the exploration pipeline, which makes this project particularly exciting.
Yeah, okay. More stuff. And what is the next sort of big milestone? I mean, you've got plenty going on. What's the next sort of big milestone you're looking to achieve then, James, overall?
Well, if I quickly touch on the other two elements.
Yes, go on, sorry, yeah.
The Parmeet Cup kimberlite pipes was a set of kimberlite pipes not far away from Petra Diamonds Cullinan mine, where we've now been awarded the prospecting license. These are known diamondiferous kimberlites, which is also very exciting. And the next steps with that would be to do a literature survey and start to get on the ground and doing some groundwork. And then finally, we announced a short while ago the award of a prospecting license on a 2.5 hectare kimberlite called Moykluf, and we've learned that a group of businessmen believe they have a mining permit over that. We're confident that our title holds correct, and even more so that mining permits are chiefly awarded for very small alluvial diamond operations for a period of 2 years and covering no more than 5 hectares.
I see. Okay, marvellous stuff. But like I said, so what's happened generally? What are you looking to achieve the next? Let's zoom out a little bit and suggest next 3, 6, and 12 months. What are you hoping to achieve there, James?
And if I look at the next 6 months, because that's how we actually batch our work program. If I firstly start in Botswana, we'll look to drill the anomalies we announced a short while ago in the Central Kalahari.
Yeah.
In South Africa, we would look to take the Free State, some of the Free State kimberlites, the next phase in drilling, and announce the drilling results thereof. In Moykluf, we've been asked by the Department of Mineral Resources to continue our work on that project, so we will do that, and we'll look at things like heavy mineral abundance and petrography as a first step. And then with Parmeet Cut, we'll do a similar level of work between now and the end of the year.
Excellent stuff. Good work. And so it's all going bad. You've got lots going on. You're a small market cap. If someone's listening to this, James, and likes what you're doing and the direction in which you're headed, but are not following the story, please give them 3 reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, Justin, absolutely. Firstly, diamonds are the strongest recovering commodity since the global financial crisis and the least volatile. Secondly, Southern Africa is the most prolific diamond production area in the world. And thirdly, is almost the corollary of that. It is also underexplored, and Botswana Diamonds is the most active diamond explorer in the region.
Excellent stuff. James, good to chat to you. And like I said, you've got a lot going on, so hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed too, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Griffiths, Chief Executive Officer of Predator Oil & Gas. That's PRD ticker. Paul, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
It's always nice to get a new company on the podcast. Now, you haven't been listed long, so I suppose it's good that we should start off with giving a highlight or summarising. What is Predator Oil & Gas all about, please, Paul?
Predator's focused on two areas. One, onshore Trinidad, where we're focused on CO2 enhanced oil recovery operations, and also offshore Ireland, where we have a license adjacent to the Corrib infrastructure, where Shell has just recently sold their interest for $1.23 billion.
Wow. And so of these two interests you have, these two prospects, what would you say, or is there a lead prospect here? Is it one more advanced than the other?
They're both being advanced on the same timeline, basically. In the Trinidad is focused really on getting cash flow from operations over the next 9 months and increasing that cash flow during those 9 months, whereas Offshore Ireland is next to the Corrib gas field is the big prize, if you like. We have approximately, in the high estimate case, one TCF of gas, which is equal to the size of Corrib. And the interest there is now from a selected number of companies that we have approached effectively to fund a well in 2020. And they all get and understand the commercial model tying into the Corrib infrastructure.
Yeah, absolutely. So take us through what we know about Trinidad then. What's the information here?
Well, we actually released an RNS update, operational update yesterday, mm-hmm. which was, in our view, very positive and good news. We secured the CO2 supply contract for all the available surplus CO2 supply in the entire island of Trinidad, which means that we've captured the CO2 market for CO2 EOR operations. And that was a very important stepping stone for us. You can't do CO2 EOR without having the CO2. So we announced that. We also announced that we were focusing on the CO2 EOR operations, basically because they can give us up to 5 times more production than the couple of infill wells that we were considering drilling. And as a result of that, it increases the potential cash flow as well from the investment compared to investment in infill drilling. So we're quite happy about that. We believe that this was the right way to go commercially.
Yeah. So take us about this CO2 sort of recovery process. How does it work then?
It's a complicated process, but it doesn't require much facilities and infrastructure. So just for comparison, infill drilling would have cost us $13 a barrel in capex, whereas CO2 costs us $1 a barrel in capex. So you can immediately see the advantages in the investment of doing CO2. CO2 is injected, sometimes with or without water, into the reservoir. The CO2 mixes with the oil, reduces its viscosity and allows you to produce more oil and potentially at higher rates if you inject it at higher pressure. And this is a process that is commonly done in the United States. The United States is the world leader in CO2 EOR recovery. So it's not new technology. It's tried, tested and proven technology, but it hasn't been done in Trinidad on a large scale like this ever before.
Okay. And these fields in Trinidad, they are sort of proven discovered fields, are they?
These are producing fields.
Oh, okay.
These are, they produce well over 1 to 2 billion barrels of oil over 50 or 60 years. And they're in the last stages of secondary recovery now. So injecting CO2 allows you to produce more oil from these fields. And by increasing the pressure, you can increase the flow rates from these old fields. And that's always been the challenge in the old fields in Trinidad, is to get those flow rates up, which infill drilling doesn't allow you to do, but injecting CO2 does allow you to do that.
Okay, and as far as, what you're hoping to produce from here and any sort of estimates of the reserves, what are they then?
The target is to reach 400 barrels a day incremental production within the next 9 months, and we'll be doing that on a monthly basis, monitoring the incremental production and announcing it on a monthly basis, so there'll be continuous news flow every month from the startup of operations, giving the shareholders an update on where the incremental production is going and how fast it's increasing, etc. But we expect to take up to 9 months to reach our first target of 400 barrels a day.
Wow.
By comparison, infill drilling, for example, an average well in an old field like this would have an average flow rate of 25 barrels a day. For 1 year. So that's the kind of uplift we're looking at, and that's the reason for fast-tracking the CO2 EOR.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and as far as and is, your next big milestone you're hoping to achieve is what, then, Paul?
In terms of onshore Trinidad, it's commencing the CO2 EOR operations in late September, early October. It takes a little while to put the facilities together and deliver the CO2 supply. But that should be kicking off late September, early October.
Absolutely. Okay, good stuff. Well, listen, Paul, if someone's listening to this right now and likes the sound of what you're doing, but are not obviously following the story because you're quite new to the market, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Number one would be the CO2 ELR operations and the potential for gradually increasing flow rates from those operations and cash flow over the next few months. Number two, and most importantly, is the Corrib gas project, Corrib South gas project, the award of the frontier exploration license this year in the next few months. We can't predict, you know, a definite time on that because that's in the minister's hands. But clearly, that's a very important milestone for us because it will trigger closing out the discussions with the parties interested in drilling next year. And the third would be that management here has experience of finding the big one. Steve Stady, for example, was involved in Cove Energy in East Africa. And I was involved in developing Tendrara, which Sound Energy eventually developed. So we know and we have the ability to deliver the big one. And the big one, in our view, is Corrib South.
Yeah, absolutely. And Steve, of course, has been on the podcast several times. And we'll be on the podcast again today because Apple has just released some new news. Yeah, so it's very interesting. And it's got to be worth saying that you are at the moment, and what current market cap is sub 3 million, isn't it? So
It's only just over a couple of million. So by analogy, Cove Energy started at a market cap of a couple of million sterling. So we know we've got a long way to go, but we're going to get there.
Excellent stuff. Paul, good to chat to you. And like I say, a lot going on in the next few months. So hopefully we'll chat again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time. Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Regal Petroleum had a bit of a high rise yesterday. RPT. At four, Bluebird Merchant Ventures, BMV. At three, SDX Energy, SDX. At two, Ananda Developments, ANA, ticker there. And number one, most followed company, did well, I think, doing well today on the podcast, is on the market, I think the share price is up. It's Rehobold Resources, RBD. All right, top five most popular RNSs are as follows. At five, Metal Tiger, MTR, Thai Minerals Management Master Plan. At four, Lions Gold Limited, Gold Block in Live Testing Phase. At three, Dr. Steve Staley was on earlier. Upland Resources, Tunisia, new permit. At two, UK Oil and Gas, UCOG, Schedule 1 update. And number one is also from UK Oil and Gas, result of general meeting. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.